Accession number 30063, Real 8.
Mr. Reed, Real 8. You're talking about the water. Was it strictly rationed?
No. Not as much. You couldn't say. I mean, there were three of us in the tank, and you had water, and you would get water no matter what you drank. You'd probably get water the next day as well. So you got a regular day supply of water, if conditions allowed it, because there might be times when the soft vehicles couldn't get up to you. You were going like the bloody clappers to get out of the way, and lo and behold, if they were there, if they got in the way, they were left behind. So they knew they had to, from brigade headquarters, go like mad, and we were pushing them or following them. So the water, yeah, I think, I can't remember, we didn't seem to drink a lot of water. We didn't seem to be desperately in need of a drink of water. We must have got used to it. I can only say that. We must have got used to having what water we did get and just taking a drink of it now and spitting it out because it was salt.
Did you ever get any, on a very rare occasion possibly, a supply of beer that came through?
Ah, I remember that. I'm trying to think where we were. We were well up into the desert. Well up. And we got 2 bottles of beer, 2 or 3. But when they were delivered to us, to the front, to the tanks, with the troops from brigade, they had it in a wooden box with straw, and it had come from Australia. And it was called Black Horse. Big job. You know, not small ones, big ones. We've got beer. Well, I hadn't drank beer, and I didn't drink a lot anyway when I was 19, 20. But here, we've got some beer. We haven't had any for months and months. So, what do? Get the beer, get the bottle. I've got 2. Some bloke said, I don't want any beer, you know. I'm having beer. And just tip it up and drink out of the bottle. And before we knew it, before we finished the beer, the bottle, we were drunk. Because it was very strong stuff, this Black Horse. We didn't realise that. But we were drunk. And we couldn't understand this bloody lot, you know. Just couldn't understand it. We put the beer down. I don't think we drank the whole bottle. And we left the other stuff. So the fellas behind would get it, you know. But that was all, no, very, very. The whole lot was frugal. I can only put it like that. And occasionally you would have a birthday and something reasonably all right.
But was mail coming through to you in the desert?
Mail, I never had. Yes, I did. That's a lie. I had one. One letter. I did have a parcel from the firm, from Headley's. But there was very little left in it. I think 2 or 3 handkerchiefs, that's all. Socks had gone, the whole lot had gone. Letters, I might have had one, and I can't remember.
Newspapers, obviously,
no,
they'd be out of date, but did they come
never
forward?
Never see a newspaper. There was used to be a newspaper in the Middle East, called Army or something like that, and that used to be distributed at base depot, and you might get something that might have found its way up there line, but no, I think it's safe to say he just didn't get a newspaper. He didn't know what was going on. They used to rely upon us in the tank, when I was in the tanks, to find out what was going on from the other regiments and see where they were coming, whether they were coming around the south or going up north or just coming straight towards you. That is for locally, you got to know what was happening. But what was happening down in Cairo or India or anywhere else was a good, bad, or indifferent. Didn't know.
You mentioned there that your parcel had been raided, hadn't it? Someone had taken stuff out of it. Did you form an adverse opinion about the real army, the real lot who were receiving these from home and then having to pass them on to you, and obviously were...
I don't think there was any adverse opinion, but we would probably put it in army terms and say, look at those crafty buggers. You know, they've worked that nicely, they've got out of the way sort of style, leaving us to wipe up for them. That sort of thing. But if you got fellows like that who are sort of replacing someone or things like that, they almost took a diverse sort of direction and didn't want to go. They had no feeling to go up there and do what they had to do and accept the consequences. They were in charge of maybe a vehicle, a lorry, a driver, a lorry, down behind the line, and the only time they drove any distance was to turn around and fly like hell back to safety again. So, yeah, there was a bit of that, I would think, from time. You crafty buggers, you know, leaving it all to us, sort of style.
And, of course, there was a great heat of the desert during the day. How did you cope with that, particularly in the initial stages when you weren't used to it?
Pair of shorts, which I still have. First of all, you didn't have any real clothing. You couldn't have it in a tank. It's bad enough to sort of sit there with these things on. So we always, wherever possible, had shorts on, just a short. I've got photographs, I'll let you have them later. And tanks. And that's it. You just had a pair of shorts and a pair of boots with your socks rolled down. And everybody was the same.
Must have been extremely hot inside a vehicle.
Sweating. Used to try and open the, what they call the cupola, the red disc on the top where you get in and get out. It was hot. If you had to batten down, what they call batten the hatches, and get it down, then it was extremely hot. And you really did sweat a bit. Not only that, but if you were in any danger, you sweated again because you had no chance of getting out. You just got to sit there and say, well, this is the luck, you know, I've had my chips, as they used to say in the army. But, no. And we were comfortable with just shorts and socks on.
Again, did you suffer from sunbite?
I didn't. But anyone who did, especially at base or like places like that, if they had to go sick with sunburn, they were for a charge.
So they'd be expected to wear shirt and trousers?
Oh, they had to, yeah. Yeah. If you were seen doing that, you would have someone shout, what the hell are you doing? You know, the way they shout at you. And, well, they just didn't do that. And, of course, they say, why didn't it affect the back of your head? And you had berries. I don't know where my steel helmet went to. It went in the early days. I never even wore the bloody thing, you know. I think it was put in a shed in Mardy in the depot. And all the kit bags with your kit in that you couldn't take with you when you were going up to the line. You couldn't take with you, were stuck in there. And the steel helmet was in there the whole of the war. So we didn't have that. Didn't have steel helmets. But you could get away without wearing a cap because you got used to it. But nowadays you couldn't do that, of course. But you got used to wearing just a pair of trousers. And the sun could be as hot as you like. And I've still got my pants on yet, my white pants. There's still a trace of them there. It's amazing. And we used to be absolutely black. I mean, this is nothing. It used to be black with the sun.
Did you experience the desert sandstorms?
Oh, yeah, come seen.
How did you cope with those?
We didn't. We just sat down. If you're in the tank, you button down. And try and keep the dust out, because it was just literally dust, you know. And the circle, you see it coming towards you. And if you got in there, you just have to sit and wait. And it was the most miserable thing on earth. No sun, the sand coming in, and it was, you were breathing it. You couldn't breathe in without having a mouthful of very, very fine sand. And that was awful. You couldn't do any fighting. You couldn't do any reconnaissance or anything like that. You just had to sit there, and the people who had the vehicles, they were okay, of course, used to button down as well, and had all the room to move around on in the back of the vehicle. But yes, they used to come regularly, the camp scene, as you call it. That's the hot one.
Was there anything about the desert and its weather and all its conditions that you found fascinating? Some people say that although it was harsh, it was quite a wonderful experience to be there. Was it that the same with you?
No. Not at all. I'm just going through the whole of the lot, you know. No. The desert was sand. And to have to, in the very first instance, coming off a ship, which was clean, tidy, all right, a lot of people there, but coming off a ship in the very first instance, and getting to Mardi, to the base depot, and having someone say, right, I'll put your kit in there and just stay there until we want you, and you can have a kip tonight, you know. Then, when you was on ready to go to sleep, you were asleep on sand. Well, can you imagine going down to the beach and with bits of kit with you and just lying down there and saying, I want you to go to sleep on this lot, you know, it's not on. So, and then at night, I suppose I was so engrossed in the fighting that went on, and the way, the very methods of everybody and everything, and used to look in wonderment and say, the bloody desert, and they're doing things like this, you know. I never reached the stage where you say, oh, look at that sunshine. It was, we'd been there long enough, all we wanted to do was get away from the desert. I didn't take a lot of notice about the desert sun dropping down behind the, whatever it was. It just dropped down there, and we made sure we had everything in place and in order to, if anything did happen, you were up and away. So all those things about the wonderful desert and things, perhaps I did see, you know, somebody said, well, I was with the adjutant's tank. You know, he might have said, look at that German over there, look at that tree, isn't that lovely? And that would be it, you know. But, no, it didn't do anything for me. And I don't think it did much for 99.9% of the blokes up there, because it was rough. It was rough. And any beautiful sunshine didn't offset the fact that this is an awful bloody place to be.
Such uncomfortable conditions, and having to live through day by day by day, did this cause tempers to fail and people to fall out with each other?
Yes. I had a Welsh tank driver, Spotter, they call him. His nickname was Spotter, because he could spot shells lying on the ground 100 yards away and drive round them. And occasionally I'd say, what the bloody hell are you playing on, spot? I get it, you know. And then you would get annoyed. But as far as I was concerned, that's as far as it got. And by that time, I was a corporal, I think, and I had a little bit of sort of leeway to go at. But no, not to the extent where you're going to turn around and shoot your mate or something like that. I didn't see any of that at all.
The thing that most people talk about there were the flies. How bad were they, and how
very
did
bad.
You cope with them?
Very bad during the day. They're not flies as we know flies here. They were big flies, almost hovering on bees. We all called it the shed beetle. If you're in miles and miles of desert, where do you go? To the toilet. And the tanks, all your mates are spread out 100 yards, there. Where do you go? If you do go, you've got to go for quite a considerable way and take the shovel with you to go to the toilet. And before you've sat down, these bloody great flies were coming along, and they would take it away. There was nothing you could do to avoid them. If you hit them, you just sit and laugh at your sort of style, more or less. But they were big things. And the flies, you had to get used to them or else, or hit them, you know. I think we did, in the tanks, we didn't have flies. I used to have, everybody had them, the fly was, you know, to spot them. It was like a bit of a shovel like that, and flexible. But they were a menace.
And food, eating and drinking with them around you, how did that affect you?
Try and get them. We used to drink your tea and just sort of flip them out. You couldn't throw your tea away and get another can, another cup, because there'd probably be another one in there. And it's amazing where they came from. It's quite amazing.
There were no devices to try and keep them away from you, were there?
No. You're still in your shorts and no shirt and things like this.
It must have been extremely difficult to get used to them after not, you know, for the very, very first time.
Well, yeah, you saw them coming, and they were sort of determined. They were determined to share anything you had with them. No, they would come, you know. And you said, get out. And it would go, get out, and it was a bad cub. Before you hadn't got back, he was back with you again. So, no, the flies were bad all over the place. I didn't like them.
You mentioned toilets, which I think you said basically you found a place and dug a hole. And that was basically how you went out.
You got the hole of the desert. You need to go to the toilet. If you wanted to go for a pee, well, you didn't. You just stood by your tank, and that was easy. But to go for the whole lot and have to walk out and find maybe a little hump like that to show you, to, you know, keep you private if you want. That, yes. But all the time in your mind, by the time you've walked out there and had a look around, are they still there? You know, they've gone and left you.
I was going to say, it must have been very difficult at night. I mean, if you had to go at night, was it difficult to find your way back again?
We had...
You couldn't use a torch or anything like that, could you?
No. We had beam signals. We had the man, the radio, the wireless, 24 hours a day. So someone during the night... and turns had to be in that thing, and they had to be in contact every half hour, every quarter of an hour, whatever it was, because you never know. These people used to creep around, you know, so you never know, they might get lost and finish up in your echelon, and here we go, somebody going mad with a gun. So they that way I've forgotten, I've lost trend now.
Yes, we're talking about using latrines, and yeah. Particularly at night time, and black, dark
good,
night. How
good.
Did you find
well,
your way back?
All you've got, it's difficult then, I can't even remember, but I can remember doing a shift. This is what I was trying to get at, a shift in the night shift, and that was only in a tank. There was never any more than three fellas in a tank. At night they used to sleep down by the side of the tank, but the bloke on duty was probably left his tank way 200 yards away over there, and for him to get back, he's got to get back to his own tank. Once he's finished that, somebody's relieving him, so that's it, he goes back to his own tank. And I did that, only I couldn't find my tank. I looked at the stars before I did the shift. I remember it vividly now. Looked at the stars before I went in the tank and closed the lid down, and that was it. Fine, I've got it now, got the stars. I didn't know the bloody stars. A whole lot were moving, and I went on the star and I couldn't find it. And I walked around all night, and blokes in the back of the lorries, I remember one bloke, I tapped him around the lorry. Yeah, what do you want, you know, on edge. I said, I've lost my tank, I don't know. Don't be bloody silly, he said. That was the attitude. So that was it. I had to walk around or sit down all night until it got daylight again and have a look around. And I was hundreds of yards away from my tank. Hundreds of yards. What would have happened, I don't know, but I thought I'd have to be a fast runner to be able to do something.
What did you do with the amount of waste? I'm thinking in terms of empty tins, empty cans, you know, wherever you may be, obviously, you're going to have a lot of waste. What did you do with it?
Didn't have waste. I mean, you might have had for your breakfast, you might have had the odd can. That would be slung just on the ground. Because
you didn't dig a hole and put it all
no,
in?
No, you'd be moving. You'd be moving. If they had a lot, if the food lorry was there and they had it like that, they would maybe try and bury it. But to get it all around from tanks, which the whole echelon was spread out, to go from there to there to take one tin or something, no. So we didn't have a lot. We had tea in the morning, biscuits, and these were the big biscuits. Well, I forget what
the
dog biscuits.
The hard tack.
Hard tack, and I broke my tooth on one. And that was normal. We used to have those in the morning, or maybe just a cup of tea.
Did you try to break them up and make them into other
the cooks, foods? The cooks used to do that. They used to boil them, and God knows what they didn't do with them, you know. Bully beef and a hard tack and swell them out a bit. And and the tea was always welcome. But we had on the tank a little stove of our own.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about your own personal little stove, or your little group stove. How was that? How did you make it? Was it already a stove when you got it, or had you manufactured it yourselves?
No, it was already a stove, part and parcel of the equipment of the tank. Any new tank should have had a stove based on petrol. And I've never known anything like it. Some of them weren't used to it. We'd blow the bloody thing up, you know. Wasn't uncommon to see a stove going. But it was, they worked all right. And cans, and we didn't have a pan or a teapot, anything like that. The petrol used to come up to us in 4 gallon tins. When I say tins, square tins. And by the time we put it into the tank, we used to have these things filled. So we used to have one of these cans, the petrol cans, sort of put a string on and tied to the back of the tank. And we used that for everything. And if it got too bad, we threw it away and got another one. But they were awful. Really awful. It was no pantomime, not sure, but that's the wrong word. There was no joy in living on a tank. and I spent about 6 months on the tank.
Yeah, we'll come to that, of course. The health situation, other than the, you know, the illnesses you got, the general health situation within the unit in the desert, what was that like?
Not bad. It had to be good, because there was a shortage of MOs anyway. And he was in the back line, as it were. You couldn't expect an MO to go up and do a tank job, you know. If anyone got badly injured, he might come up and sort of see what he can do, or the blokes in the tank would be seeing what he could do. So you took pot luck, you took, and that was it. I didn't see a lot of damage, no. Whatever it is in the, I didn't see a lot, and he managed to get away. If anyone was injured, if a tank was knocked out, it was left there, and the bodies were taken out and buried there, so that when the Christian, whoever it was, came up, followed us up, because all these things used to follow you, you know. They would see the tank and they would look around straight away for a body with a cross, but just a piece of wood in the nail, and that was it. They would either take it back and do it properly, or whatever, or it stayed there. I often wondered what happened to some of the places where they were, you know.
So these were following you and picking up the dead.
Oh, all these are part and parcel of the whole scenario. All looking forward, or looking to support this bloke up there.
Mm-hmm. Did you suffer, or did you see people suffer from desert sores? Evidently, that was quite one of the problems on the desert.
No, not in my vicinity, no. Shall I say? Not in my. You see, you were so far removed from the next tank that although you were with them and everything had to be coordinated with the whole lot, they were far enough away to say that you don't see them from one day to the very next. You see, you saw them, some of them used different little flags to put up to move you one way or the other. All this was coordinated, and you were part of that. But, and really, if a fella had, in the next tank to you, had sores or was it, eventually he would either have to go back and somebody else would have to come up and take his place. That didn't lie, but we'll go later. But sores, he didn't get a chance to say, how's your leg this morning? He said, all right, you know. There's no passing the time of day.